before you get to any other reason for why the air is bad on the west side of the Salt Lake Valley, you have to take into account the basic topography. We're in a bowl, and the cruddy stuff just settles at the bottom, the west side. But that's not the only reason. The reporters Alex L. Cabrera and Sage Miller recently documented a much more complicated story, a series of events and decisions and conditions that brought us to the point where we can now definitively say that West Siders are less healthy than those who live on the other end of the valley. They're prone to have higher asthma rates and birth defects, more difficult pregnancy outcomes, even higher cancer rates. Alex Allen Sage told us this week that one of the things they really wanted to do with this project was just go out and talk to people on the West Side about what it was like to live where air pollution can reach these dangerous levels. And that's how they met Oliver. Oliver Lube.
He is 13 years old, and at the time we spoke with him, he was 12.
Yeah. He is honestly just a bright, bushy-eyed kid.
O-L-I-V-E-R.
And he has the biggest rosy cheeks you can see and a very wide smile.
And he is a very particular young guy, so he wears all the time these t-shirts that have a bow tie on them.
And he has dozens of them. And he loves his family. He likes spending time with his friends. He's on the debate team.
He likes to play video games, pickleball.
And he likes spending time outside when he can.
So Oliver's family spent a lot of time in Provo. That's where he spent the first years of his life.
And he didn't necessarily have any issues, at least nothing that was prevalent.
But then they moved to Kearns.
And then the first year that they moved to Kearns, they started noticing that he began struggling to talk.
It got to a point where he could only say one word, clear throat, one word, clear throat. It says, Mom, can I have a cookie?
They didn't know what was going on. It was really irritating to him because he couldn't get a word out. And then when he was in the first grade, when he was attending a Westside elementary school, he said that he felt his throat starting to close and he didn't want to disrupt the teacher because the teacher was teaching, but he couldn't breathe.
And it took a really long time for me to finally actually like caught my lungs to start breathing normally and for my allergies to calm down.
That's when he learned that he was having his very first asthma attack. So they took him to the doctor, and that's when the doctor told his dad, Anthony Lube, that his throat was closing and that he couldn't breathe. And that's the reason why he was trying to clear his throat between every word, is because he was essentially trying to open up the airways to get a sentence out.
I felt like, wow, dad of the year. I'm trying to tell my son, stop breathing. The
first thing. And they found out that he was allergic to many things, like anything that you could see anywhere, in a park, in a house.
Pollen, dust, grass, things that made it very hard to live in an area where that's getting whipped around during wind events or just it's in the air because it's in the air. And his life started to change. His family started to monitor very closely about what the air quality was like.
So whenever there is a yellow air quality day, he cannot go out to recess.
The lucky thing was that there's two other kids with asthma that their parents had kept them inside with me, so we got to play with each other. So luckily I wasn't the only one getting left out.
Also, Oliver likes to play sports, so he tried to join his soccer team at school. So he stays in, plays video games, and when there are good days and he feels good, he can actually play pickleball.
And that's kind of been the life that Oliver has lived since he moved to Kearns.
Kearns has one of the highest PM 2.5 levels in the valley.
It's close to major freeways. It's close to the ailing Great Salt Lake that kicks up some dust.
And a lot of constructions. When we went to see his house and the park where he plays, we saw a lot of construction sites.
It's close to other industrial polluting industries that can make and exacerbate air quality.
These kinds of things, joined to his allergies, really make it hard for him to breathe.
I feel like it would be nicer to go somewhere that it has better air quality, because then I'd be able to do some more activities and do it for a longer period of time.
We wanted to know if the air quality was actually worse on the west side of the Salt Lake Valley. And the answer was a resounding yeah.
If you go to the west side and you ask around about their health concerns, many of them have them. And we interviewed dozens of people on the west side to talk about these concerns.
There are multiple people that we spoke with who have very similar issues with asthma, or people who have first moved to Utah and didn't start developing respiratory issues until they lived on the west side, to the point where they're telling other family members, like, don't move here.
And it's not only about their health issues, but it's about disparities around the valley, about their access to healthy food, also the participation in local politics and policies that really affect their lives.
Even just the mental aspect of it, of people knowing what they're walking out into and not wanting to be out there anymore, so they stay indoors. There is a disparity, and people are aware of it. It's just a question, is anybody doing anything about it?
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So today in the program, we're going to be talking about life on the West Side. Now, there's history here as well as pollution and health data. Sage Miller and Alex L. Cabrera will take us through their series. This is a collaboration between KUER, the Salt Lake Tribune, and Columbia University. They called it Reaching for Air. Here's Alex L.
I was the West Side reporter at the Salt Lake Tribune when we started this project, and that got me thinking a lot about West Side issues and in a way that other reporters maybe didn't think about. So back then, we were doing a lot of solutions, kind of events and listening sessions at the Trib. And back then, Sage also worked at the Tribune.
Yeah.
She organized a whole summit, which was amazing to hear about all of the issues and concerns that Westsiders had. And one of the biggest priorities or concerns from Westsiders was air quality.
Yeah.
And they talked a lot about health issues and how many of the kids had asthma.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we later learned that some women were experiencing miscarriages because of this. So we thought that we really wanted to demonstrate how big the problem is. And we thought, what a great way to do it than like to talk with dozens and dozens of Westsiders about this particular issue that they're telling us they really care about.
Absolutely. I think the first-person narrative in the human experience is a critical part of journalism, especially when you're talking about these issues that feel so intangible in some ways, or you're looking towards government officials or people with a heightened sense of power to solve issues like air quality or water quality or a drought or any essentially environmental issue. But understanding from a humanized perspective, what that does to an individual's day-to-day life, and do they even recognize what's happening to their day-to-day life? So when I did organize that summit, when I was the innovation lab reporter at the Salt Lake Tribune, which was all focused on solutions, I went in with this eye of what can residents tell us about the solutions they would like to see, and are they showing any solutions on grassroots solutions in their own communities where they're not looking towards people in positions of power to solve the issues, but are they doing anything inside their own homes, inside their own communities? And the summit really was eye-opening on how big of an issue environmental issues posed within the West Side. And so that's when Alex L. came to me and she said, hey, I want to apply for this grant from Columbia University that'll allow us to build a project around West Side narratives based on their experiences with the air that they breathe. because we've always heard that air quality, especially around the Wasatch Front, that is horrific. You can see it, you can smell it, you can taste it. But that was concentrated. The worst concentrations were on the west side of Salt Lake County. So not just Rose Park, Glendale, it's West Valley, it's Magna, it's Taylorsville, it's Kearns. It's these areas that we think of as urban sprawl and not anywhere associated with really where the Capitol's at. It's where you look at, like you get to the top of the Capitol, you are looking at the west side of the valley and you are seeing that smog build up. But what does living in that smog mean for the people there?
You know, it's interesting, Alexel, you said something to us that I wanted to ask you about. You said when you were talking to these people about air quality, that sometimes they spoke in poetical ways. What did you mean?
Yes, and it's something that we didn't prompt them to do. So it just came out of their hearts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, for example, we asked them, how do you feel like when you're coming back to your house, and if you're going, let's say, to Park City or somewhere that is higher up? And they said, well, I feel like I'm going to go to a bowl of soup, to somewhere where you can chew the air and see it. And it's like going into a black and white movie. People really think about this a lot in a way that it really is not only affecting them in...
It's not just their health, it's their heart, right?
Yes.
Emotionally.
Yes. And we've also heard that this is like reading a very old novel of somebody experiencing like the Industrial Revolution, maybe.
Wow.
So it's like we're still living through these things.
I want to ask you about Tegan and Dallin. This is one of the couples, one of the many, many, many people you talk to over the course of this project. I think one thing that was interesting about their story is they gave, I think, some insight into just what your day-to-day life is like when you're contending with really crappy air. Sage, I guess, would you talk about Tegan and Dallin?
Yeah. So they're a young married couple that I believe moved to the west side of Salt Lake City, and they describe the neighborhood as characteristic, as lovely. They love their neighbors. They love being there. But something that makes them irate is the air.
I was outside and I could see over to the refineries, which I have a very clear view of from my house. And one of the refineries was blowing off thick black smoke all the way up into the air, and it was just dissipating everywhere. And I was outside and I could taste it in my mouth.
Refineries blow constant pollutants into the air. There's a rock quarry just north of us that's constantly blowing dust into the air, and it's absolutely frustrating seeing all these pollutants come into our neighborhood and knowing that there's no leadership that's going to do anything about it. It's really upsetting.
Dallin specifically describes himself as very active. He loves being outside. It's part of the reason why he loves living in Utah. But what it looks like outside determines what kind of activities he allows himself to participate in. He won't go on walks. He won't go on runs. He won't exercise. He will try and not run the errands that he needs to. And when he does, even if the air is okay, he describes the anger he feels walking home and seeing plumes of smoke essentially surround him from the refineries nearby, or the dust from the gravel pits that aren't far from his home.
I literally have to leave the valley to go get quality air and make sure my lungs are safe.
You can hear the emotion in his voice, the anger he feels about what he believes nobody is doing anything to fix.
It's hard to think about investing in the neighborhood and investing our lives in the neighborhood, knowing that our leaders in the city don't really take our health seriously.
And Tegan, his wife, feels very similarly, but I think she thinks about it more in the future, as we learn from the interview that we did with her.
We want to start a family, and we are scared to start one here because of the pollution. And I'm scared to be pregnant and have my child exposed to whatever I'm breathing in. I'm scared to have a baby and have them breathing in all this air pollution. And I feel like that is a big barrier to me staying here and a huge consideration of what my future is going to look like, because I just don't feel like in good conscience I can raise a family in this neighborhood because of the air pollution.
that's a stark reality for a handful of folks who love the community that they're a part of, but don't know if it's sustainable or responsible to remain a resident of.
Alex L., when someone who lives, gosh, anywhere in Utah, thinks of the west side of Salt Lake, what do you think they think of? Like, what's the caricature or what's the reputation, do you think, of that area?
Yeah. Some people see it as a very dangerous part of town because this is where gangs congregate. So I feel like that way of thinking has really changed throughout the years, that people now have more information about the West Side and really like try not to make a bigger stereotype of what it is right now. But from what I heard since moving here in Utah, and I telling people I'm the West Side reporter, people are like, oh, it's so dangerous.
Okay, so there's the reputation part of it. But what is the reality? Like, how do you characterize the West Side in terms of demographics and culture? How do you guys now, having spent, and gosh, Alex, for as much time as you'd spent covering that region, how do you talk about what it's actually like there? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Demographically, we know that the West Side is the host of many communities of color here in Utah. It's also where many communities that are blue collar live. Also, if you see a little bit of like voting patterns, you see that people there really don't vote as much as like other areas in the valley. I think when I go to the West Side, I see a very vibrant community. And I'll tell you like this personal story.
Yeah.
My parents are from Venezuela. They don't speak English. So when they came to visit me here in Utah, we went to Rancho Market on the West Side.
Awesome.
And my dad was like, oh my God, like it's the first time that I really feel like I have a connection with somebody here. So it's that place for immigrants and people of color. It's home for a lot of people. It's where they feel comfortable. But it's also a place that has been underserved for many, many years.
Yeah. Okay, so here's something I wondered in reading your piece. Was there always a West Side and an East Side? Like in this state, was there always a – were they always segregated in terms of race and class? And was it always inevitable that it would be the West Side that would get the, you know, the burden of industry and the neglect of political leaders, which seems to be what happened? Like, did that have to be this way when you look at the history part of what you covered? I want to hear you both on that. Alex, are you first?
Okay. So – No, because everything is planned in a way.
Yep.
So
yep.
As early as the late 1800s, there was a miscalculation from East Coast planners when Salt Lake City was growing into an industrial hub.
Let me underline this because this is a really important thing.
Sure,
okay,
yeah.
So one of the things you say in your piece is that the West Side became the city's industrial hub because of this miscalculation that plays out. And this happens in, what, 1893, I think it is, in the 1890s anyway. Sorry, keep going.
So in the late 1800s, Salt Lake City was growing, and they were wondering where to put all of this industrial plants.
Yeah.
So they were kind of wondering, how do we mitigate the effects of this polluting industries? And people from the East Coast came in, and they said, well, you have a river, which is the Huron River.
Mm-hmm.
And because of meteorology and wind patterns, we think that the river will filter out all of the smoke. And
you can't put it on the east side because there's no river to create a barrier.
And
so we need to put it on the west side because you have the Jordan River.
Yeah. But they were also thinking about how rivers work on the east coast.
Yeah.
So the Jordan River is not a big, massive river like those. And that's why we placed all of these industries on the west side.
Sage, do you have anything to say about this history part, about this kind of miscalculation?
Yeah, I think that at some point, urban developers, the state knew that their prediction or their hypothesis around how pollution would be filtered out was wrong, but all the infrastructure was already there, so they didn't change it. And then they added additional policies to essentially segregate the West Side from the rest of the East Side that made the West Side undesirable, made a place where only certain people were allowed to live and another place where people never wanted to touch foot in.
This gets us to redlining, right?
Yeah.
So you have, okay, so you have some experts who sort of miscalculated where we need to focus the industrial hub. They learn later that, oh, this, maybe we didn't do it right. But then there's this thing that people know about called redlining that really seems to burnish what happens and sets it in stone. How does, Alex, I'll talk about how redlining then plays a part in the story.
So when we started this project, we kind of like, we always married it with redlining and how its legacy always, like, it still lives. So back then, we had this discriminatory policy where banks wouldn't grant loans to people of color in desirable areas of town, and they would only grant that to the West Side. That kind of like concentrated many people of color on the West Side. And we have a lot of like comments from people saying like, well, we don't think that this disproportionate pollution can be a result of a racist policy. But it really is, because it's where people were pushed to live at. And it's also a place that they knew was not desirable because of the air quality, because of all of the industries. And also some people wanted to live on the West Side because they worked at those industries. So it's a mix. But at the end of the day, we as a city didn't invest as much on the West Side because of that. And that's why you see that the West Side doesn't have as many grocery stores, mm-hmm. hospitals, trees.
Yeah.
And that is something that we still see today. And also the West Side, until now that they're planning the Glendale Regional Park, they didn't have any regional parks. So you have very old regional parks like Sugar House Park, yeah. Liberty Park on the East Side, that these parks really filter these particulates. And the West Side doesn't have it. And a comment that really was very sad to read in the EPA study that the EPA conducted last year was a West Side resident saying, we are the human filters because we don't have the trees to filter those.
Yeah. I want to talk about this report from the EPA because it seems like there has been this discussion for decades really between about the disparities in health between the East Side and the West Side in terms of air. And people have started documenting it for sure, but it was in last year that you mentioned in your piece, a report from the Environmental Protection Agency that really, as you put it in your story, confirmed what West Siders have always felt. That the air, it's not just in your head. The air is actually worse and your health is actually worse. Will you talk a little bit about the report, if you will? Sage, you want to take that one?
Well, let me give you a sense of how the EPA study even got started in the first place. And it all comes back to community members on the West Side very much so caring about the environment that they live in. So West Siders have known for a very long time that the air they breathe is not equitable. There are some lingering issues that other folks across the valley do not face that West Siders absolutely bear the brunt of. But they were having an issue proving it. And so a group called the West Side Coalition that focuses on advocacy on the West Side band together to try and encourage the EPA and the state to study this issue, to essentially prove like, hey, we know something is wrong and I don't know what you need in order to listen to us, but maybe an EPA study will help. And so they worked, they hit the pavement, they attended so many meetings, they wrote so many letters, and eventually the EPA study was allowed. I don't know if allowed is the right word, but the EPA study came to be, it came to fruition. And that's when it showed what West Siders already knew, that they do bear the brunt of bad air. And they are essentially, in some aspects, human filters to the problem that the state has not solved.
Yeah. As we wrote in the story, it confirmed the suspicion that many West Siders had, that the air is worse and that their health and life expectancies are lower because of where they live. So
asthma, higher asthma rates.
Yes.
they have higher health risks and socioeconomic risk factors that exacerbate them.
Sure.
So that's where we go to environmental justice. So it's not only that they breathe the worst air, but they have less access to healthcare and healthier food options.
Yeah.
So the West Side has the highest asthma burdens in Utah and lower life expectancies when compared to the East Side. And West Siders are also at a greater risk of cancer from air pollutants than other parts of Salt Lake City. And West Siders already knew this. And for example, when we first heard of this big West Valley City hospital that the University of Utah is building, they cited all of this data. So what the EPA did was basically gather all of this data that already existed and put it into a very official document. And this was a big deal for West Siders because, first of all, they really fought to get this done. And second, because it opens up the doors for solutions.
That's Alex L. Cabrera, formerly of the Salt Lake Tribune. These days she reports for the Utah News-Dispatch. Sage Miller is a politics reporter for KUVR. We'll put a link to the reporting project on our website. It has lots of maps and tape and graphics. It's called Reaching for Air.
Key in on a sort of specific thing that you mentioned. Say a little bit more about this particulate matter. The study refers to this PM2.5 particulate matter. And before we get people too confused about all of that, let's just say that because of the geographic shape of this valley, the people who live on the west side live in the lowest part of it. And these particulates sink to the bottom, right? So if you're looking for a reason why the air is crappier there than it is in the east side, that's one of them, right? It's just by virtue of the fact that they're at the bottom part of the valley. You want to say more about that?
I mean, yes. And that's something that I feel like a lot of elected officials hold on to. The West Side has this particular geographic position where they're the lowest part of the valley.
Yeah.
And yes, during the inversions, they're going to get the.
And so, wait, you're saying that they're saying there's nothing we can do. It's just the shape of the valley. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it's an argument that's used a lot.
Huh. Huh.
However, they're also downwind Woodscross plants, so they're downwind there.
Yeah.
They also have the airport. They have the biggest routes of railroads. So and you have three major highways converging.
Mm-hmm.
So they will get PM2.5 concentrated there during inversions. But something that can be controlled is the amount of that particular matter that comes into that wall.
What is this doing to a person's body who lives on the west side? What does this all mean?
Well, some health experts say that what this does is very comparable to smoking. So if you smoke a pack of cigarettes, that takes away years of your life. That's like something that's widely known. It's like that with air quality. If we heard from doctors that when they're performing autopsies and they see the lungs of people who have been known smokers, but they have lived along the Wasatch Front their whole lives and they're black. And it's just because these particles, they don't leave the body. And there is no good amount of bad air quality. So what they say is like, It's comparable to smoking. Whether you smoke one cigarette or a whole pack, the difference is not that much because you're already doing the damage.
And it affects beyond just the lungs and the respiratory tract, which is what a lot of people think of. It affects cognitive ability. It affects pregnancy outcomes. There's been studies to show that people on the west side of the Wasatch Front are more likely to have miscarriages or stillborns or birth defects, and that kids are more likely to develop some kind of disease outside of just outside of respiratory. And so it really does kind of compound all of these problems, even if you don't necessarily recognize it. And it has, you know, effects outside of just the physical health of somebody. We've heard multiple people over the dozens of Westsiders that we talked to talk about the mental strain it is to visually see the air you're breathing and not really knowing what's going in your lungs, mm-hmm. but knowing that it's not good. And then you add an ailing Great Salt Lake. The West Side is essentially surrounded by Great Salt Lake and the dust that's in there. And there's not a lot of studies to show what's in that dust just yet or what it does to the bodies, but we know it can't be great. And they know that they are also being hit with that dust while dust storms. And one story that always kind of stuck out to me is how common people would talk about mud rain on the west side of the Salt Lake Valley.
Mud rain.
When it would rain really hard and winds were really high, that people's cars on the west side would be coated in mud. And you wouldn't see that on the east side. And if you did, it wasn't as bad as the west side. Like one of these events, Alex L. and I were talking to a bunch of high schoolers at Granger High about their air quality stories. And one of those events came through and I walked out and my car was brown. Like I have a blue car, like a blue gray car, and my car was brown. And I was just like very much so shocked. And the people that we talked to were like, oh yeah, this happens like not super often, but often enough to where they aren't super fazed by it. And part of that is because of the amount of built space and dust surrounded by them that is getting mixed up with wind and with water. And so they know that they're breathing that too. And those events are becoming more common as the Great Salt Lake continues to decline. So now air quality, instead of being kind of a seasonal thing where we'd see ozone in the summer from wildfires, which weren't really from Utah, but from the surrounding states, and inversion in the winter, we are now seeing the fall and the spring be more wind related, which is causing air quality to be a year-round issue rather than just a seasonal issue.
Yeah, and I wanted to add to that anecdote of the mud rain that day I had two assignments. So one of them was in West Valley City. We went and talked to the high schoolers, got the mud rain. Then I parked in Fair Park. And they, like, the cars did have that brown color, but they weren't as brown as mine. Mm. So there's also, I feel like there's also a difference between how west you go.
Yeah.
Because I guess the proximity of the Great Salt Lake.
Sage, will you talk about Daniel Hernandez? People who read your piece will be sort of struck by the fact that he was thinking about KN95 masks way before the rest of us were during the pandemic. We all discovered these masks that help us. But he had been thinking about that in his life because he lived on the west side of this valley.
Yeah. And he grew up on the west side of the valley. But I think his attention to the air became very apparent when his kid was born and he had some health issues.
My oldest son, when he was born, this is now about 14 years ago, he was preemie, got RSV twice in his first year of life. He had a lot of issues with his lungs. And so we began me and my partner became very conscious of air quality stuff because of his condition.
They just became very aware of it because they knew the breathing issues that their son would experience and that his family had kept experiencing, that they needed this to protect themselves. So those KN95 masks, while they help keep viruses out, they also help filter some of the particulate so you're not breathing it in. Hmm. And that was common for him and his family to wear on bad air quality days. But he also talks about how it's not just the air that is bad.
I do think that the West Side has a lot of other factors that are compounded, right? Like water, air, food. What food do we have access to here? I grew up with more 7-Elevens. I mean, there's no Whole Foods that I know of in my neighborhood, right? I don't know if I could afford it anyway, but there's 7-Elevens all over the place. And so on top of that, we have these other health factors. I'm going to avoid going to the doctor as much as I can because I don't have the greatest insurance.
It's like what Alex L. said. It's the food that they have access to. It's what kind of transportation do they have access to? You kind of need a car if you're going to live on the West Side. Do they have access to healthcare? And what kind of access is that healthcare when a lot of the kids or a lot of the community members are experiencing the same issues? And what does that mean? And what can it tell us? And it tells us that redlining and the legacy of it still exists.
Sage Miller, she's a politics reporter for KUER. We also had with us Alex L. Cabrera. She's a reporter for the Utah News Dispatch. Their project is called Reaching for Air. You can find a link to it on our website, radiowest.org. Okay, let's shift to a really important part of the series, the last part where you talk about solutions, what's being done or what maybe isn't being done. One of the important parts of the story as you report is that there is a reason to be hopeful. Alex L., why? Why is there a reason to be hopeful, do you think?
I'm always in awe of the community organizers on the West Side. If you think of somebody who's very hardworking, they put in like 10 times that work because there's not a lot of resources on the West Side. So I got to speak with somebody who, it's Turner Beaton. He is the chair of the Glendale Neighborhood Council. And he says that we really have more power in communities than ever on the history of the West Side. So you see parents who really see their kids struggling and they want to change that. They see grandparents really going to the EPA and asking them for this study that will bring solutions. So I feel like the West Side communities are very hopeful because we are trying to find solutions and we're seeing changes, at least in citywide policies, where the West Side is getting more equity.
I think this is something I realized, that being engaged in your community or being like a political activist for some of these causes is quite a privilege because sometimes people just don't have time to do this. So talk a little bit about that. But are you starting to see people, even though they haven't been able to in the past, finding time to speak out in some way?
I'm trying to think about kind of the answer to that, because I do think that's kind of one of the disparities that we see from West versus East is the amount of time allocated or the amount of time available in order to, you know, do boots on the ground, grassroots activities to fight for environmental justice in the area where they live. Like we talked about the demographics of the West Side, where a lot of people work more than one job, or they have multiple kids that they need to take care of. They can't show up at the Capitol during session at 2 p.m. on a Wednesday afternoon and lobby for better air quality. Like they really do have to instill that trust on their elected officials in order to get the job done. And depending on who your elected official is and what side of the aisle they are, that can be definitely hard in a super majority Republican state. And so I do think that there is more advocacy around it, especially as they have heard over and over and over again from state and policy officials that they want to clean up the air. We hear Bryce Byrd with the Division of Air Quality say, we know this is an issue and we're working to fix it. But then they see policies like expanding I-15 and putting an inland port in their neighborhood that goes directly against those words, right? So at this point, from at least the people that we've spoken to who talked about the political ramifications of air quality, they just don't believe their elected officials at this point anymore. And so they are looking at community leaders or organizing more to try and fight back against that, or just really kind of build a coalition of themselves of how do we deal with this? If we can't fix this problem, what are methods that are available to us to deal with the consequences of it? There's air filter programs, for example, to switch out the air filters in people's homes. There's masks programs to try and get more masks so people don't breathe that kind of air. There are initiatives to switch out gas lawn equipment or like snowblowers for electric, because that'll help, right? These small steps that residents can take preemptively or after the fact, because statewide policy or citywide policy or countywide policy just isn't happening fast enough. And we know that policy moves very slow. So they are trying to take matters into their own hands, even if it's just educational, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't really have any product to provide you, but we can inform you, like, hey, maybe don't go outside on these days, or like learn a little bit about what it means to be breathing in PM 2.5 and what it can do for your kids. Or this is why some of them can't go to school on certain days of the week. So I think there has been a lot more education around that issue. But you hear kind of experts like Daniel Mendoza or professor of atmospheric science, Kevin Perry, say, you know, policy is everything in some of these instances where we do actually need to see concrete policy. And as a politics reporter in the day-to-day life, this past 2024 session with the Utah legislature, there was none. There was no air quality policy done. I heard some conversations that, or specifically from Republican Senator Kirk Colmore and Senate President Stuart Adams, that they were essentially trying to work on the trains that run straight through the West Side. But from my knowledge, that's a handshake deal, and that's not a written thing down on policy. So it's, again, not something that is set in stone. It's something that you're crossing your fingers hoping will come to fruition.
You talk to a lot of people. When you ask people on the West Side, what's a solution you want? What do they tell you?
Oh my gosh. Number one, off the bat, more public transportation. They're not asking for it to be free.
Yeah.
They just want more of it. They want more bus routes. They want more tracks lines. They want more frequent service. They want to make sure that it's like equitable. If you've ever navigated the UTA bus system, for example, I live a mile away from the Utah Capitol, but I have to take three different buses to get there. I'm going to drive. I'm driving to the Capitol, or I'm carpooling, right? And so they definitely want to just see more access to public transportation and have that be equitable. Yeah, that was the biggest one. I think almost every single person we asked when we were saying, hey, what's a solution you'd like to see? It was public transportation.
What about you? What do you hear?
Public transportation is a fan favorite, but also we've heard from people who are just asking for things to be easier. So please, please bring a grocery store to the West Side. Please allow us to walk places and make medicine cheaper for us. For us, like people who don't have insurance. People really want to see these kinds of things. And immediately, they would like to see also more access to like cheaper filters, maybe, to at least control their indoor pollution. So a lot of the infrastructure on the West Side is like old.
Yeah.
So we see a lot of older homes there, and they don't have the most like energy efficient equipment. So I know that the city has some rebate programs for that, but to change that whole area of the city, it's pretty hard.
And I also think one of the solutions that they would like to see is just better access to their public officials. And I guess for them to keep their promises, or at least hear them out on these issues. A lot of the lawmakers on Capitol Hill, or on Utah's Capitol Hill specifically, don't live on the west side of the Salt Lake Valley. And the only time they ever see the inversion is when they are here for the legislative session in January. And what I've heard for some from some advocacy groups and for some lawmakers that very much so pound the pavement on air quality issues is that the biggest motivator to ever want to deal with air quality from the legislature is when air quality is bad during the session, where lawmakers can step out onto, you know, the beautiful Capitol grounds and just see the smog cloaking the city. And they say when they see that, it's usually the best air quality legislation that is passed. But what we've heard from lawmakers, especially on the bipartisan Clean Air Caucus, is that they've done a lot of the low-hanging fruit. And now what it comes down to is big budget items to very much so drive and clean up the air. And that is a lot harder to get a majority to fund.
Let me ask you finally, why do these people stay in these neighborhoods? And I am not suggesting it's easy to move or find someplace else. But it was a question you asked. What was the answer you got?
We asked this to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And many of them bought homes on the West Side.
Yep.
So the market back then when they first bought their homes is very different to the one that they're getting right now. So it's not like they can sell their homes and buy another one somewhere else. They also love their communities.
Yeah.
So it's where my kids go to school. Mm. It's where we go to the park. And I love the community. We are involved. If I go to the Smiths, I know that I will see my council member there and I can ask her something.
Yeah.
And it's just home. It's comfortable. And it's, despite all of these issues, it's a great place to live.
Yeah. And I think the people like really love it. That's one thing that I heard from a lot of folks was just how caring, kind, how they like love knowing their neighbors, how they can rely on their neighbors for anything from ibuprofen to a cup of sugar, and how they do feel like very close. People say they live there and they want to stay there because of the cultural diversity that the West Side has to offer. Their neighbors look like them. And that's not something that they typically see on the east side of the valley or in the avenues or in Sugar House or Federal Heights, wherever it is. But they can go into a neighborhood in West Valley or Kearns and find somebody that speaks the same language as them. I talked to another woman who says that her neighborhood in Rose Park, I think she lives on a cul-de-sac, and she said that 8 of the 10 houses all speak different languages. She's like, you're not going to find that anywhere else. You're not going to find the melting pot of cultures anywhere else in the state. And demographics do show that the West Side is the most diverse area. And so a lot of people want to stay there because they see themselves in that city. They helped build those communities. And why would you leave that? But you do have other people who say, I'm looking into it because I don't know if my health is worth it. We've talked to some people who have left the West Side entirely because they just can't deal with the health ramifications that it poses on their body. But we've also seen other people who say, I'm not leaving. This is my home and I will fight. I will fight to the death to make sure that if I'm not going to breathe cleaner air, my grandchildren are, or things like that. So you just see the resilience. And there's an argument, like, do they need to, for how long do they need to be resilient? At what point can we just give them a break? Like, at what point can the state just give them a break? But you can tell that they're not going to stop and that this is their home, this is their community, and this is what they're going to fight for.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Dawn.
Thanks, Doug.
Sage Miller. She's a politics reporter for KUER. We also had with us Alex L. Cabrera. She's a reporter for the Utah News-Dispatch. The project is called Reaching for Air. It's a collaboration between KUER, the Salt Lake Tribune, and Columbia University. We'll put a link to it on our website, radiowest.org. There's lots of graphs and maps and tape. You should go check it out. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And you can email us with questions or comments. We're at radiowest@kuer.org. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.